Not only is it not an apocalypse, they're having a Disney Pixar movie premiere right now for Elio, a movie about aliens. Don't tell Trump, he'll send the Green Berets in too, but yeah.
No kidding. Bring them on.
Man. Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No,
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in the City of Angels, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brant Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from brandblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for the broadcast. All right, by popular demand, Desi Doyen.
Oh, yes?
Yes, popular demand. Our always right, longtime old school blogger pals Digby and Driftglass will be joining us again today with some insight on the past week or so of the continuing madness, particularly out here in Los Angeles, where Donald Trump is warming up, I think, for a declaration of the Insurrection Act.
Yep.
In my opinion,
anyway. Whole lot of madness going around.
Yep, with his first, but I will bet you not his last, deployment of U.S. soldiers to the streets of America to help quell protests from fellow Americans. The great Digby, like us, is also an L.A. resident, which I guess makes her a criminal now, since the Homeland Security Chief Kristi Noem this week declared the City of Angels to actually be the City of Criminals. All 4 million of us, Christy, even though we never murdered our own dogs. But anyway, it was primary election day on Tuesday in New Jersey for this year's governor's race. And there were legislative special elections for 6 seats in 3 different states, including a stunning, massive landslide win in one of them. Let's go to the Garden State first, where Republican MAGA candidate Jack Cittarelli, who had President Donald Trump's endorsement, and Democratic Rep. Mikey Sherrill both won their primary elections in New Jersey's race for governor on Tuesday, setting the stage for one of 2 off-year gubernatorial races this year. The other will be in Virginia. Sherrill fairly easily won with about 34% of the reported vote in an otherwise very crowded field of Democratic candidates, with several both on her right and left in the party. Her closest competitor with 6 candidates in that race trailed Sherrill by about 14 points. She emerged the winner, apparently, on the strength of her biography as a U.S. congresswoman, a Navy pilot, and a former prosecutor who has been a vocal critic of Donald Trump. Sherrill defeated a fellow House member, the mayors of the state's 2 biggest cities, a former top state legislator, and the head of the state's influential teachers union. In her victory speech, she criticized Cittarelli as a, quote, lackey of the president's, and hinted at the importance of the state's role as one of just 2 holding a race for governor a year after the presidential election. Quote, New Jersey once again stands at the front lines, she said. We are in an American crisis, but not in a war for independence, but rather a fight for our future. The Republican winner, Cittarelli, meanwhile, is a former state lawmaker and small businessman who easily dispatched 4 rivals, winning almost 68% of the vote on Tuesday after being highly critical of Donald Trump as a con man back in 2015. Like the rest of his party, Cittarelli has now come around to bending the knee to Donald Trump. And Trump's endorsement easily sealed the deal for him in that Republican primary. Cittarelli heads into the fall election seeking to win back the governorship for Republicans after two straight Democratic victories, as he hopes to build on his 2021 performance when he lost, but he came within just a few points of defeating the current Democratic governor, Phil Murphy, who is termed out this year. The two open races for governor this year, the other, as I mentioned, in Virginia, are likely to be seen as bellwethers before next year's midterms, offering signals about how the public is responding to Trump's agenda and whether Democrats are on the right path toward rebuilding after last year's defeat. New Jersey has been reliably Democratic in Senate and presidential races for decades, but the odd year races for governor have tended to sort of swing back and forth from Democratic to Republican and vice versa. So despite Jersey's general blue lean, this is not a race that Democrats should be taking for granted, not by a long shot this November. Yesterday, as well, residents in six legislative districts across Oklahoma, Florida, and Massachusetts voted in special elections for state House and Senate members. Democrats beat expectations in five of those six races. The most surprising came in Oklahoma. As reported by the down ballot, the most dominant victory came in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where Democrat Amanda Clinton, a public relations consultant and a member of the Cherokee Nation, cruised to a 69-point landslide over Republican Beverly Atterbury to defend the 71st House District in Oklahoma. Since Kamala Harris carried that constituency by a 19-point margin, that means Clinton's win represents a 50-point overperformance, the second largest this year in Oklahoma. 69-point landslide. So when we talk about an overperformance, what we're talking about is what is expected as compared, in this case, to the most recent presidential election in that particular district. This 50-point overperformance against what happened last year in Tulsa relative to Harris's margin in 2024 is about four times larger than the average swing toward the Democrat that we've seen across all state legislative special elections so far in 2025. The median seat has moved 13 points towards the Democrats since November. But it's not just in Tulsa, districts where Democrats were expected to win, if not by 69 points. Democrats also turned in overperformances in four Republican-held districts on Tuesday, including in the nearby 74th House District in Oklahoma, where they overperformed from last year's presidential election by 13 points. And in three races in Republican-held districts in Florida, where they overperformed by 11 points in one district, 19 points in another, as well as by 21 points in one House district in the otherwise very red panhandle of Florida. The best result for the GOP, as the down ballot also reports, came in Massachusetts, where Democrat Lisa Field declared victory in Bristol County's 3rd House District after election night returns gave her a bare, 50.2 to 49.8 margin. So 0.4 of a percent.
Wow.
Over her Republican opponent, Larry Quintal. So that is very close. Turns out it was just 21 votes, at least as of right now, because that was just election night's reported results. So things could change as additional mail-in votes are tallied and as the race is canvassed in the days ahead. In that case, Democrats actually lost some ground in Massachusetts as Harris won that district by 6 points. Even worse, that was a big drop in 2024 from 2020, where Joe Biden had carried it by 16 points. That shift gave Republicans hope that they could reclaim a seat that they had previously held for a long time from 2010 to 2020. but they came just 21 votes shy of doing that, at least on election night. The Republican, Larry Quintal, has said justifiably that he would seek a recount, with the state GOP saying that some mail ballots had yet to be counted. What? I thought Republicans were against counting any votes after Election Day. Not so much all of a sudden?
Yeah, it turns out not so much.
Well, good. They shouldn't. They should absolutely ask for a recount, preferably a hand count there, if it's allowed in Massachusetts legislative races, when a margin is just 21 votes. But overall, with that one exception, it was a very good night. Another one for Democrats, once again, in special elections. Overall, in 29 special elections so far this year, Democratic candidates have run 16.4 points ahead of the 2024 presidential results on average. That, again, according to data compiled by the Down Ballot. All right. Just an hour or two after we got off the air on Tuesday afternoon, California Governor Gavin Newsom gave a brief televised address recounting much of what we have been documenting on this show over the last couple of days about how Donald Trump turned fairly small and very limited protests out here in L.A., small by L.A. standards in any event, in response to his amped-up military-style ICE roundups of non-criminal migrants in the city into a reason for him to federalize the California National Guard and deploy them in defiance of the wishes of Governor Newsom and of L.A. Mayor Karen Bass, along with even the deployment of a battalion of U.S. Marines onto our streets here in L.A. for some reason. From his retelling of how we got here, Newsom moved into what all of this means in broader strokes, not just for us here in Southern California, but across the rest of the country, where, as the governor charged, Trump is now using authoritarian, wannabe dictatorial-style tactics to undermine democracy itself, as well as long-held American values and the U.S. Constitution. Here are some of those remarks from Governor Newsom on Tuesday evening.
Trump is pulling a military dragnet all across Los Angeles, well beyond his stated intent to just go after violent and serious criminals. His agents are arresting dishwashers, gardeners, day laborers, and seamstresses. That's just weakness, weakness masquerading as strength. Donald Trump's government isn't protecting our communities. They're traumatizing our communities. And that seems to be the entire point. California will keep fighting. We'll keep fighting on behalf of our people, all of our people, including in the courts. Just yesterday, we filed a legal challenge to Donald Trump's reckless deployment of American troops to a major American city. Today, we sought an emergency court order to stop the use of the American military to engage in law enforcement activities across Los Angeles. If some of us could be snatched off the streets without a warrant, based only on suspicion or skin color, then none of us are safe. Authoritarian regimes begin by targeting people who are least able to defend themselves, but they do not stop there. Trump and his loyalists, they thrive on division because it allows them to take more power and exert even more control. And by the way, Trump, he's not opposed to lawlessness and violence as long as it serves him. What more evidence do we need than January 6th? Ask everyone, take time. Reflect on this perilous moment. A president who wants to be bound by no law or constitution, perpetuating a unified assault on American traditions. This is a president who in just over 140 days has fired government watchdogs that could hold him accountable for corruption and fraud. He's declared a war on culture, on history, on science, on knowledge itself. Databases quite literally are vanishing. He's delegitimizing news organizations, and he's assaulting the First Amendment. And the threat of defunding them, at threat, he's dictating what universities themselves can teach. He's targeting law firms and the judicial branch that are the foundations of an orderly and civil society. He's calling for a sitting governor to be arrested for no other reason than to, in his own words, for getting elected. And we all know this Saturday, he's ordering our American heroes, the United States military, and forcing them to put on a vulgar display to celebrate his birthday, just as other failed dictators have done in the past. Look, this isn't just about protests here in Los Angeles. When Donald Trump sought blanket authority to commandeer the National Guard, he made that order apply to every state in this nation. This is about all of us. This is about you. California may be first, but it clearly will not end here. Other states are next. Democracy is next. Democracy is under assault before our eyes. This moment we have feared has arrived. He's taking a wrecking ball to our founding fathers' historic project. Three co-equal branches of independent government. There are no longer any checks and balances. Congress is nowhere to be found. Speaker Johnson has completely abdicated that responsibility. The rule of law has increasingly been given way to the rule of Don. The founding fathers, they didn't live and die to see this kind of moment. It's time for all of us to stand up. Justice Brandeis, he said it best, in a democracy, the most important office, with all due respect, Mr. President, is not the presidency, and it's certainly not governor. The most important office is office of citizen. At this moment, we all need to stand up and be held to account, a higher level of accountability. If you exercise your First Amendment rights, please, please do it peacefully. I know many of you are feeling deep anxiety, stress, and fear, but I want you to know that you are the antidote to that fear and that anxiety. What Donald Trump wants most is your fealty, your silence to be complicit in this moment. Do not give in to him.
That was Governor Gavin Newsom sounding the alarm on Tuesday night, addressing Trump's unprecedented authoritarian response to protests against his roundup of migrants here in the city of Los Angeles in recent days. Digby and Driftglass join us next to help make sense of it all. Somehow, that's straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Would be nice. Family of brilliant and troubled Beach Boys leader and musical visionary Brian Wilson announced on Wednesday that he had passed away at the age of 82. No other immediate details were known, but his music and artistry will continue to brighten summers and winters out here in Southern California and everywhere else around the world for time immemorial. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As noted yesterday, Team Trump is seeking a state of tyranny and fear here in the City of Angels as he invokes questionable authority to federalize 4,000 California National Guard members in defiance of the California governor's wishes and some 700 U.S. Marines in defiance of the law and U.S. Constitution itself, it would seem. That all in response to largely peaceful, but relatively tiny, at least by LA standards, protests over the weekend following military-style roundups of migrants hoping to meet Stephen Miller's 3,000-a-day quota of arrests. Now in places of work, schools, courthouses, and Home Depot parking lots. Not exactly where one would expect to find the so-called worst of the worst. that Donald Trump ran on a vow of deporting, but I would suggest it's a mistake to look at this as a battle between Donald Trump and Los Angeles, or even Donald Trump and California. His declaration to federalize the National Guard did not specifically cite California or L.A., rather dubious, though, the authority of the his Title X authorization may be for this. It proclaims that Trump has the right to federalize National Guard essentially everywhere if he so wishes. And while Title X authorization requires that the orders to do so pass through the state's governor, which they decidedly did not here in California, and they come in that they come in response to rebellion against the U.S. or invasion, which there decidedly is not here in L.A., and it bars the use of military troops for participating in police actions on American soil. An invocation of the Insurrection Act would go a long way toward removing most, if not all, of those restrictions. He has yet to invoke the Insurrection Act. Not yet. But if you pay attention to the rhetoric now being used by the administration and its supporters, it certainly seems as though that is the groundwork they are now hoping to lay in advance of his invocation of the Insurrection Act to largely do whatever he wants in the use of military troops on American soil. For example, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that a letter sent on Sunday from DHS Chief Kristi Noem to Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth seemed to request that he authorize military troops to arrest and detain people, something which would only be legal-ish under the Insurrection Act. Moreover, the language she used in that letter seemed to include a lot of language found as justification for invoking the act. For example, she wrote to Hegseth, quote, "We need support to our law enforcement officers and agents across ICE, Customs and Border Protection, Federal Protective Services, as they defend against invasive, violent, insurrectionist mobs that seek to protect invaders and military-aged males belonging to identified foreign terrorist organizations and who seek to prevent the deportation of criminal aliens." Those words echoed, if not written by Trump's immigration Goebbels Stephen Miller, are the sort of trigger words that one would expect to use to justify the use of the Insurrection Act, no matter how absurd all of those claims might seem to those of us here in LA, where, by the way, it's another lovely sunny day, very peaceful and quiet outside. Despite the fact that there is supposedly this invasive, violent insurrection going on. In the bradblog.com comments section this week, listener Don L. posted, quote, "Emergency," and linked to a graphic of an alarm with the words, "Break glass, broadcast emergency Digby alarm." I guess he's trying to tell us something. Joining us now to discuss all of the above and probably more from the past week or three, if we have time, are two of our favorite longtime pals and roundtable guests that, yes, have been sounding the alarm with some frequency on this show this year. Heather Digby Parton is the award-winning salon columnist and creator of the long-running, much-beloved Digby's Hullabaloo blog. And our old friend Driftglass, who is no less alarming and is sometimes known as Just Bill. He's the longtime author of the Driftglass blog and the co-host of the weekly Pro Left podcast, produced each week, rain or shine, from what he and wife Blue Gal describe as flyover country Illinois. Welcome both of you back to the broadcast. The alarm bells are ringing.
Yeah.
That they are.
Although not for insurrection. That's a whole different thing. Digby, let me start with you, since, like me, you are here in L.A., though out near the coast in Santa Monica instead of back here in Hollywood. So let me ask you, are you okay? Do you need anyone to send food, water, blankets, ammo to, you know, survive the the Battle of Santa Monica Boulevard that is apparently raging outside?
It's sheer hell. It's sheer hell. I can't even tell you. You go down to the Whole Foods, and you know you have to. The parking lot is just a mess trying to find a place.
Wow.
It's hell. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you.
Sounds bad.
I can barely leave the house. I'm just so concerned. I'm really hoping to see in the next few hours, maybe the next day or so, to have some tanks stationed outside my house so that I can be sure to feel safe from the invasion of, you know, the gardeners, nannies, you know, workers that I, you know, live with in my neighborhood.
Oh, I see. So, you're protecting those violent, vicious criminals. I see. Of course, I kid. But, you know, as you know, this is a town of protests. Marches shut down major highways out here pretty much, you know,
once a week.
Exactly.
It happens all the time.
And now I happen to think most of this originally was meant to distract us from Donald Trump's many failures, like his inflationary tariff regime, his unpopular budget bill, his ongoing actual wars that he promised to end but couldn't, or perhaps most importantly, Elon's charges that Trump is in the Epstein files, some of which I also hope to talk about. But what is all of this chest thumping and drum beating about when it comes to California right now, as you see it, Heather?
Well, I think, you know, everything's a distraction from everything else, right? I mean, that's the whole point of shock and awe, which is the strategy that they've deployed since they took office. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, what he's doing here in L.A. is a part of his plan. You remember they carried mass deportation now signs at the Republican convention.
Yeah.
He said it and he meant it. And this has been something that he wanted to do from the very beginning. But I think that there is something else that's going on. And I think it runs even deeper than that, which is he does want to deport all these immigrants. I think he'd be happy to deport every immigrant, even the ones who are citizens, right? I mean, I think that's definitely something that he would enjoy and his people would enjoy. You know, they are, I guess, what Jamelle Bouie called today in his column, he called it, they have a libidinous desire for violence. And I think that kind of captures it pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely part of it. But there's something deeper going on because he's been targeting California for, you know, years, but very much so recently. I mean, one of the things that I think people don't talk about enough is the fact that, you know, LA has just been through one of the worst national disasters in American history. Mm-hmm. It was only 5 months ago that we had raging fires. You guys were evacuated from your home. Yep. I mean, I was waiting on tenterhooks to see if I was going to be evacuated.
Yep.
This was really a serious, serious natural disaster that caused vast sums. Expense, the cost of it is monumental here, and how much it's going to cost to try and rebuild this place, to deal with all the displacement, including many people who were undocumented and documented workers that were displaced. I mean, we've been through hell here. So naturally, Trump comes in and decides that this is going to be the big place where he's going to stage the first really massive big city ICE raids. Mm-hmm. And so this is where he's going to do it. And he's going to bring LA to heel. Finally, he's going to bring California to heel. Mm. He's telling Gavin Newsom, you are nothing. You are dirt. I'm going to take over here. And I'm going to federalize your National Guard, Gavin, because you have no power whatsoever. I'm going to send in my Marines as well. And that's what we're going to take over your city. And you are going to start behaving. You're going to start doing what we tell you to do. Mm. And by the way, they've got five more cities on the agenda. They've announced it now. Mm-hmm. It is Seattle, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and Northern Virginia. They are sending in the, I don't know what they call them, the ICE assault troops or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they are all on standby. And you can bet that the U.S. military is going to be on standby, too. So everybody get ready. That's underneath it all. That's what this is about.
Yeah, and I think until Governor Newsom made that speech last night, I kind of felt that he has been sort of pulling his punches against Trump for the last 6 months because because they need that federal disaster aid to rebuild after the fires earlier this year. I guess, you know, that plan didn't work out. So nope. Now he's speaking up. Driftglass, even though Digby has just mentioned that Chicago is now on the list, are you kind of jealous that Trump has yet to deploy troops to fight you and your fellow insurrectionists in Illinois?
Well, don't you need some protection?
Yeah, you ought
to. I mean, come on.
We've got cornfields on one side. We've got Lake Michigan on the other. We're going to be fine.
We'll see.
You can't get to
we'll
us.
We'll see.
You've just in the Navy.
You've just described exactly where you live. So now they're coming for you too, pal.
And I lived in Chicago for 25 years. Yep. So I'm very familiar with Chicago. And if I can paraphrase Rick Blaine from Casablanca, there are parts of Chicago I wouldn't advise you trying to invade. Because they will mess you up. They will mess you up very, very badly. And we will applaud. Uh-huh. But yeah, we're on the list. We're on the target list. And we have a governor who, you know, I'll just say this, has never had Charlie Kirk on his podcast. Mm-hmm. Has never had Michael Savage on his podcast. Uh-huh. But I give your governor all the love in the world because he stood up and there were no punches pulled at all. One only quibble I have with Governor Newsom's speech was citing Congress generally and not Republicans in Congress, because this is a Republican thing. This is a MAGA Republican thing through and through. And trying to localize it to Donald Trump, I understand rhetorically why you do that, but it was all about Trump and his loyalists and Trump and him and him and him, which is fair. But this is a much deeper problem. I think Digby's absolutely right. This is a much deeper problem, much wider problem. And this extends deep into the grassroots because number one enemy for Americans in my part of the country, for MAGA people out here, is Hollyweird and Hollywood celebrities. Because you know who promoted that Kamala Harris woman? Hollywood celebrities. Yeah. So they've had a hatred for Hollywood in LA forever. And now they finally got a guy who's going to roll tanks in there. But yeah, we'll be next. He'll come to Chicago and he's going to find a governor here who has, I don't know, $20 billion in the bank and has been calling him out as a totalitarian, you know, scumbag and his Nepo baby head of the CDC now, his director of health, RFK Jr. So Pritzker has been pulling no punches since day one.
Yep.
And he hasn't lost a step. And he's all over social media. He's all over television. His speeches are out there in the public. And he's got his chin way out there. We have his back.
I'm curious because, both Digby and Desi and I were, all out here in L.A. And when we saw, what was going on, the rhetoric about what was going on, L.A. is burning to the ground. Donald Trump said that if he didn't send in the federal troops, L.A. would have been burnt to the ground by now. So we're kind of watching the coverage going, wait, what? It's a gorgeous weekend out here. What the hell are they talking about? So I'm wondering from outside, what did it look like? Did it in fact give the impression to folks like you, like, oh, this was it? L.A. was burning down again, that it was Rodney King 1992 all over again?
Well, all of that rhetoric wasn't aimed at people like me. That rhetoric was aimed at the base of the Republican Party. You know, the people who are sitting in their trailers, terrified that the migrant hordes are coming over the crest of the Cahokia Mounds and will be in their backyard real soon and will take all of their stuff and do whatever immigrants do, which is terrifying. So it wasn't aimed at me. I mean, you could change channels and change realities that easily. If you're over on the right wing, it's Armageddon. It's World War III. It's Invasion LA. But it's a show. And it's designed to be that way. That's why you put Dr. Phil at the head of the troops. So he's there to narrate the story, the glorious story. And so it has nothing to do with reality. And we all know that. But it is effective because if you're not there and if you're willing to, take their word for it, and God knows why would you, it looks like the end of the world because they keep showing the same nine images over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. The same Waymo car burning over and over and again. And by the way, being from St. Louis, Missouri, myself, Driftglass, I appreciate your deep cut reference there to Cahokia Mounds. Thank
I'll
you.
I'll go Merrimack on you very soon.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. That's one of my favorites.
That's where I'm going to hide out, by the way, the Merrimack Caverns.
Caverns. Along with Big Joe. What was his name? The Indian from.
Injun Joe.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite.
Wow. Very good. Very good, Brad.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite canoe trips in the world is down the Merrimack River. Anyway, we're off topic.
Yes.
Digby, on Monday night, I think it was, Homeland Security Chief and puppy killer Christy Nome said this about Los Angeles and about LA Mayor Karen Bass.
Is endorsing these kind of activities has allowed her city to be completely devastated with crime, and now she's holding press conferences talking about the fact that people have the right to peacefully protest and that they're a city of immigrants. Well, they're not a city of immigrants, they're a city of criminals, because she has protected them for so many years. And so we're coming in and doing what the president has said that he's going to do, and he's going to allow people to live in a safe community again.
So I got to tell you, when I heard that, calling L.A. a city of criminals, she then later on went on from the Oval Office to say that nobody should ever vote for Gavin Newsom again or something like that. How did that make you feel, hearing that you live in a city of criminals, Heather?
I can't even relate to you how inflamed I felt after hearing that.
Yeah.
That woman, of all people, saying that. I mean, the horror of this. By the way, can I just say right now, this is a woman who sleeps with Corey Lewandowski. So I'm sorry, I have no respect for her whatsoever.
Allegedly.
That's how much I loathe her. Allegedly.
Okay. Let me
allegedly.
Add that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't really need to hear from her and see her Mar-a-Lago face anymore. It was absolutely the lowest thing that I've heard her say, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
But, you know, Donald Trump actually did one better. He stood there yesterday and called L.A. a trash heap. So, you know, this is what we're getting.
Unbelievable.
From the presidents and his administration. So it's great.
Back in,
you know, 27, I think I heard 27 out of, I don't know, there's some kind of very large number of Americans live in California, and a very large number of Californians live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
They are condemning many, many millions of people when they say that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Something like 4 million in the city of Los Angeles alone. 4 million criminals. Who knew?
Yeah.
Now, Driftglass, back in 2020, amid far larger protests across the country after the murder of George Floyd, Donald Trump was asked about federalizing the National Guard against the wishes of governors, and conceded that at the time, back in 2020, that would be unlawful.
We have laws. We have to go by the laws. We can't move in the National Guard. I can call insurrection, but there's no reason to ever do that, even in a Portland case. We can't call in the National Guard unless we're requested by a governor.
But this week, he was asked by a reporter after he had, in fact, federalized the National Guard against the wishes of the governor. He asked what had changed since 2020.
In 2020, when you were talking about unrest in American cities, you said, quote, we have to go by the laws. We can't call in the National Guard unless we're requested by a governor. What changed now? Why is this situation different to not consult with Governor Newsom about this?
Well, the biggest change from that statement is we have an incompetent governor. So I talked about governors, but I didn't talk about he's an incompetent governor. Look at the job he's doing in California.
Okay, so Gavin Newsom was already the governor of California back in 2020. So that is actually not what changed. What has changed, Driftglass, as you see it?
The first thing that's changed is that they ripped off a song from the Dragnet movie from 1980-something called City of Crime. So that's your deep cut for today.
Okay.
The second thing is that Donald Trump simply has no reason to obey the law anymore of any kind for any reason. And it doesn't matter if you play all the videos in the world of him saying something. It doesn't matter if you go to Mike Johnson and ask what's the difference between now and then. They feel no compunction of breaking the law because there's no one to stop them. And so he just lies his butt off and does it all the time, makes up whatever pops into his head, and makes sure it's an insultingly vicious lie. not just an ordinary law.
So do you feel this is really bounces off of the Supreme Court's ruling last year about presidential immunity, essentially saying that, no, he doesn't actually have to follow the laws? Is that what this is?
Who's to stop him? I mean, they did say, you're right, the Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump can do whatever he wants in his official capacity, and he's never breaking the law as long as he's doing it officially. And he thinks, you know, he's willing to say that we should arrest Gavin Newsom.
Right.
For what? I don't know. But
he said for being elected governor, that was enough. Yeah.
I think we have to sort of get past the point where we're continuing to bring evidence to the table to prove that Donald Trump is a criminal scumbag. He is. And it's a fact. And therefore, no more evidence is necessary. We're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep pointing and saying, can you believe he did that? And I understand that. And that's fair. But the answer to all of those questions is, because they elected him, because he has broken the law and gotten away with it, and because he runs the Congress. And so he can do whatever he wants. And that is an ugly, terrifying fact. And it's a fact that we warned people about for years. We begged people not to do this. We pled with them. We wrote postcards. We went door knocking. We gave what money we could to our candidates. And we still came up short because 77 million or so, 80 million, however many, people voted for exactly this. This is exactly what they want. And that's a fact we're going to have to sort of internalize before we figure out what to do next.
Well, and then the question, you know, continues to be on top of that. When, if ever, does this change? Digby, there's your old friend Christy Noem, who was at the time back in, I think this was, a couple of years ago, 22, I think this was. She was the governor of South Dakota. This was during Biden's presidency. She tweeted, quote, "If Joe Biden federalizes the National Guard, that would be a direct attack on states' rights. Over the last several years, we've seen Democrats try to take away our freedoms of religion, assembly, and speech. We can't let them take away our right to defend ourselves, too. South Dakota defends the Constitution," said Noem, trying to ward off the notion of Joe Biden federalizing the National Guard. So I think we're all sort of old enough here to remember when Republicans and MAGA were all about states' rights. So, Digby, how much of will MAGA actually continue to put up with this once this begins to come to their hometowns, or will it ever come to their hometowns?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, just today, the attorneys generals of a bunch of red states, I don't know, a dozen or more, mm-hmm. Put out a letter supporting everything that Donald Trump is doing and saying that federalizing the National Guard is the right thing to do.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think this is just the MAGA cult. And I think that they, as long as it's Trump doing it, they'll be for it. The minute it's not him, they'll be against it. And they retired the concept of hypocrisy a long time ago. And they don't believe in any kind of consistency.
But that's the officials. That's the elected officials, the attorneys generals. what about the voters? I mean, you know, the MAGA voters who are at home, are they going along with this? Are they going to go along with this? Because they weren't saying don't tread on me because they thought it was a political slogan. They actually believed it.
Really?
They meant Democrats don't tread on me. Okay. Democrats. Okay. This, and just to put in a plug for this person named Digby, who's a terrific writer.
Yes, she's good.
Decades ago on her blog, I read about the fact that it is Republicans do not recognize the Democratic Party as a legitimate governing entity. Mm. Democrats are inherently illegitimate. When we win elections, it's wrong and must be fought against. So if they don't believe in our legitimacy as a prima facie thing, therefore anything they do to undermine or attack Democrats is legitimate, because we are the enemy. Mm. And those rules do not apply to them because they're not the enemy. They're the children of God.
That Digby person is pretty smart. We should talk
really
about
smart.
Yeah,
yeah, just,
yeah, she's not that great, honestly. No.
Listen, the language that I mentioned in the opening that Noem was using, saying that, you know, writing to Hegseth that we need the military to come help our ICE agents to protect from insurrectionist mobs, protect that seek to protect invaders and military-aged males who seek to prevent the deportation of criminal aliens, foreign terrorist organizations. With that kind of language, I'll start with you, Driftglass. What, you know, is it even fathomable at this point that this is not, in fact, headed toward a declaration of the Insurrection Act, probably sooner rather than later at this point?
I think sooner rather than later. I don't see any reason to that they would stop. That's the thing. There, I can see that Donald Trump is a physical and moral coward, right down to his shoe tops. He is terrified of ever being caught. He's terrified of going to jail. And so he does react like, you know, something hitting an electric fence every time a barrier goes up. But then, like the raptors, he goes around and tests the fences and finds the hole. Right now, there's nothing stopping him from doing that. Now, he can just go ahead and declare, keep using the military, using Marines, keep using, I don't know, the 101st Airborne, whatever he wants to do, without declaring an insurrection. Because why would he bother? But if anybody ever challenges him, he'll just do it. And I don't see why he wouldn't, because nothing, he never stops unless someone stops him.
Digby, do you expect the authorization?
I do. And in fact, I read something and I wish I could remember exactly where it was, but it was Stephen Miller.
Just say it was on Driftglass blog.
I read this brilliant thing on Driftglass blog. Maybe I heard it on the podcast, but either way, it was brilliant. And it was about the idea that Stephen Miller has given interviews in which he says that they have plotted this stuff out, you know, with a plan B, plan C. He has this legal foundation. I can't remember what it's called. America First Legal, whatever.
Yeah.
So they've been thinking all this stuff too. They have guys like, you know, what's his name? The one from the first administration.
Russ Vaught?
No, it's the lawyer.
Eastman.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, my brain's not firing today. Right. Anyway,
it's been a long 5 months. I do understand.
It really has. I'm just the brain cells are deteriorating quickly.
And there's so many criminals.
Maybe it's all the drinking. I don't know. But whatever, something's happening. Anyway, the point was, if I can remember what it was that Stephen Miller had this interview in which he talked about this. That this is actually part of their plan. What they're doing is that they're testing, just as Driftglass just said, testing the electrified fence here to just see what they can get away with. So Gavin Newsom has, the state of California has filed a case against what Trump did over the weekend by federalizing the National Guard. If that case puts a stay, I think, on what they're doing, if that judge does that, I think that's when Trump may invoke the Insurrection Act to keep going. They've plotted it out step by step.
Uh-huh.
And especially since now they kind of know how the courts are operating on this, right? They are slow. So they can just find these ways to do it. And I think if the Insurrection Act, if they find that his interpretation of it, that there's a rebellion or, you know, what an invasion or whatever that's required to do that, and they actually rule against him on that, then I think that he calls for martial law or something like that. So I think they've got this all plotted out on how they're going to do it. This particular action that he's doing right now, they thought this through well before they took office. This is Stephen Miller's baby. This is what he's been planning to do, what he's been dreaming of doing since he was a misfit weirdo over here at Santa Monica High.
Yep.
And this has been his plan. So I think they know exactly what they're doing with this, and they're rolling out this plan very specifically with the idea of militarizing the streets in all these big blue cities.
I've got just a few minutes left here, but I want to run through because basically it seems to me that all of this was meant to distract us from Trump's immediate woes at the time. As of Friday, for God's sakes, you had Elon Musk, you know, tweeting that Donald Trump is in the Epstein files, calling for his impeachment and calling his so-called big, beautiful bill a disgusting abomination. So that all kind of escalated very quickly on Friday. Now Elon Musk seems to be climbing down. He deleted the the Epstein post. He says he regrets some of those posts about Donald Trump last week. He says he went too far. So what does that climb down by the world's richest man against the world's most powerful man actually tell you about both this fight and why it has seemingly come to an end, Drifty?
We talked about this on our podcast, which is what happens when an irresistible idiot meets an immovable a-hole. And and what gives? And I think we concluded that Elon Musk has all the money in the world, but Donald Trump can take it all away from him with a stroke of his pen. He can nationalize the SpaceX. He can cut his contracts. He can roll troops in. He can seize his assets. He can do whatever he wants. And Elon Musk does not have that kind of power. He has media power and he has financial power, but he doesn't have actual on the ground gun power. And so eventually, and he's right, Donald Trump's not going to be around forever, but Elon Musk is going to be around for 40 years. But it doesn't matter because right now the upper hand is the guy who can call in the Marines and take all your stuff away. So I think eventually the ketamine wore off and he realized what he had done and said, oopsie, that's not good. So he decided to climb back down. And as we say on our podcast, the base are reprogrammable meatbags. So this in this moment, however, this is a very interesting moment. And you see it happen about every 6 months or a year. When the lie stops, when something conflicts with the orthodoxy of their big lie, that base voters don't know what to do. You know, daddy and daddy are fighting, and I don't know who I'm supposed to back. They're both supposed to be infallible and beautiful and wonderful, and they're fighting. And you can see them just running in circles, not knowing which lie to believe, and there's no official lie coming down the pipe to mollify them. So I think one of them had to back down, and the one who backed down is going to be the one who can't call in the Marines. So I think that's what's happening right there, and it's what we expected. We didn't expect it this fast, but, you know, Musk knows where his bread is buttered and who's paying the bills, who's actually paying the bills, and it's the U.S. government.
And I think Trump knows where his bread is buttered, and he knew that it was the right time to, you know, go to Stephen Miller's plan that Digby referenced in L.A. Let's do it now. You know, while everybody's looking at this fight between him and Elon Musk, Digby, I want to let you get in on this. And by the way, I thought we would be talking about this, you know, for much of this week after what happened on Friday, when it looked like that's all anyone was speaking about. And this includes, you know, not just, you know, political nerds like all of us, but actual, you know, the America was looking at this and going, wait, what? But now it's gone. And all of this, I should note, also started with the bad spending bill that sort of kicked off this dispute. Discussion of that also seems to be gone. Digby, any thoughts on the Elon Musk, Donald Trump dust up and the spending bill that is still theoretically pending in the U.S. Senate?
Well, I agree with everything that Driftglass just said about the dynamic between Musk and Trump and the how MAGA dealt with it, which I thought was really fascinating because they were very confused and upset. And I had to enjoy that a little bit. You know, we get so little real Schadenfreude these days that, you know, you've really got to embrace it when you see it. And this is, brings up the question of what this what happens with the, quote, one big beautiful bill, because that was the catalyst for the spat, was that Elon was upset that Trump wasn't listening to him and that wasn't doing what he wanted him to do. And so he went ahead and, you know, got a double dose and then went crazy on X. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens now, because Musk said, I think, you know, that he said he regrets some of the posts. He didn't say I regret all the posts. He said I regret some of the posts. I suspect that those are the ones that were very personal, you know, the Epstein file thing and, you know, the various sort of, you know, kind of personal attacks that he made against Trump. We don't know yet whether or not he's going to back off on the big, beautiful bill thing. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, because that was a big source of his activist power on Twitter. Because remember, last December, he basically put a stop to the continuing resolution. Mm-hmm. He killed that bill. Trump was just sitting around Mar-a-Lago, you know, eating Christmas cookies and didn't really even know what was going on. And it was him who stopped it. And then they had to go and went through all that Sturm und Drang, if you remember, about whether or not they were going to shut the government down over Christmas.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was him. That showed his activist power. And so it'll be very interesting to see how he deals with the big, beautiful bill. Now.
And I got to get out here, but do either of you guys have any idea where this bill is? I mean, nobody's even talking about it anymore. Is it actually moving ahead in the Senate, or is it actually in trouble?
It is.
It's moving
it is.
Ahead?
Ron Johnson. Yeah. Ron Johnson just said, yeah, I had to talk with the president and I feel really good about it.
Oh.
The big problem right now will be in the House, where the senators do not want to do the SALT bill, you know, the repeal of the SALT thing with local state and local tax for the big blue states.
Yeah.
And the big blue state representatives in New York and California are saying no, no, no. So that could be interesting.
It seems to me they're going to get this through one way or another. But on the other hand, I think it's going to be a bloodbath for them if they do.
I do, too.
Yeah. Driftglass, quick 15 seconds of thoughts before I get out.
Donald Trump is the most Republican president in the last 50 years. He has done the thing that is the only thing conservatives ever cared about, which is tax cuts. And he did it by firing up the base and getting the rubes out to the polls to hate people like me and immigrants and gays and lesbians, et cetera, which has been a Republican strategy for 50 years. So he is the most perfect distillation of the real Republican Party that I've seen in my lifetime.
Agreed.
No fair remembering things.
Yeah, no fair. I know.
All right.
Thank you very much for that.
And the fallout from all of that, we will discuss in the days, weeks, and I'm afraid years ahead. Thank you, guys. Driftglass is the co-host of the Pro Left podcast, which you can find each week at proleftpod.com. You can find his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com, and you can find him on the blue skies at simply Driftglass. Heather Digby Parton you can read her work, of course, at salon.com every day and over at digbysblog.net. She, too, is on the blue skies at digby56. Thanks, guys. We'll be talking again soon.
Thank you.
Okay, we got to get out, but very quickly, you know, he makes a very good point about the most Republican ever.
Yes.
He's given Republicans everything that they have asked for God knows how many years, everything that they have insisted that they want. Well, we'll see how much they want it. We'll see how much they actually like it.
Especially if it crashes the economy and the Constitution and turns into dictatorship. Yeah, all of that.
But they won't be able to complain that, he was a weak-kneed rhino. He didn't do what we wanted to do that would have been very, very popular to the American people. We'll see how popular all of this is.
Yep.
All right, got to go. Anyway, thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can always download them for free, no paywall, at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you kind enough to hit a donate button while you're there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. To help us continue to do what we try to do every day over your public airwaves with your support. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here again, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.